Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
You're listening to The Archaeology Show. TAS goes behind the headlines to bring you the real stories about archaeology and the history around us. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello and welcome to The Archaeology Show, episode 219.
On today's show, we talk about 3D scans of the Titanic, Pompeii, and the Mayan Lightning Lord.
Let's dig a little deeper, but you can't even get deep enough where deep sea submersibles can't find you and take pictures of you. Welcome to the show, everyone. How's it going?
Pretty good.
Iceberg dead ahead. We'll get to that in a minute.
Isn't that iceberg right ahead?
It's always dead ahead
is
in
it
ships.
Dead ahead? It's dead
because it's like dead reckoning. Everything is dead.
See, the only thing that matters for Titanic is the movie. So,
well, we can't just go straight into an article, otherwise people will unsubscribe. We need to tell all of our new listeners that are our RVing friends and all our other listeners that don't have RVs yet. If you don't have an RV, you should get one and join us on the road. But aside from that,
for sure.
Yeah, we are in lovely temperate San Luis Obispo, California.
Yes.
And it hasn't...
gorgeous here.
Like one day since we've been here, it's been over 70 degrees.
Yeah, it's amazing. We had the heat on this morning.
Yeah, it's
but
ridiculous.
Not in a way where like you're winter cold, you know? Just like, oh, there's a little bit of a chill. I need to put the heater on for a second.
I mean, I had a freaking sweater on. And
I still have a sweater on.
We went to breakfast and the place only had seating outside down in Pismo Beach.
Yeah.
And it was like that slight misty.
Yeah.
It wasn't rain. It was mist. If you understand, you understand.
Yeah.
And it was
it's
mist.
It's called If You Know, You Know.
If
get
you
it
know,
right.
Oh, sorry. Okay, boomer. Anyway, I just okay boomer myself.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah. I'm not even a boomer.
Oh,
yeah.
Man. Okay.
Anyway, yeah, it's great over here. And it's a great place to be when the summer starts to heat up in most places, which is one of the best things about RVing is we can go to the weather
we
want.
Yeah, we just go. It does get somewhat warm here in the summer, but you know what? By the time that happens, we'll be gone.
Yeah, exactly.
We're enjoying springtime here for sure, though. It's so green and pretty, and we're parked on a friend's land, and they're just surrounded. They're in this like little valley, like really little valley that's surrounded by mountains, and it's so pretty here. I love it.
Yeah. And this has nothing to do with archaeology, like the last 5 minutes of the conversation. But I don't think Rachel's probably going to sleep in, but I'm getting up at about 5 tomorrow to drive about 30 miles south and stake my claim near Vandenberg. Should I edit that out? No, I probably won't. The Vandenberg. Vandenberg Space Force Base, where there will be a SpaceX rocket launch, a Falcon 9 rocket launch tomorrow.
Yeah, it's like a light going through the sky.
It's not a light,
that's
it's
all
a
you
rocket.
Can see. I know it is an actual rocket, but like that's all you're going to see from the ground. I don't know if I need to experience that.
You actually see the rocket when you're less than a few miles away.
Maybe.
Like the only one we've seen was in Florida, and we were probably 40 miles away.
Yeah.
You could barely make out the rocket.
Yeah.
It looked like a tiny little speck.
It was
and
during
you could
the
see
day,
the
too, so that didn't help.
Yeah,
but
no, this is going to be in the morning just after sunrise, so it's going to be pretty good.
Okay, we'll see. I might be motivated to go with you in the morning. We'll see.
Right. You know what else just happened just after sunrise? People from the Titanic were rescued because the ship was at the bottom of the Atlantic.
True. I think it was a little before sunrise, but yeah.
Well, they were still picking them out of the water at sunrise, I would say.
Well, not living ones, but anyway.
Well, yeah, probably.
Yeah, so I am sure that everybody listening right now has seen this because I feel like it's hit the mainstream news media and it's just been everywhere. Did you like feel like it was everywhere?
There are two things that are everywhere when they hit the news. Stonehenge and Titanic.
Yeah. And sometimes Pompeii.
From a historical standpoint.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess Pompeii you could probably lump into that.
Yeah.
I mean, so, today's episode is any guide.
I know, right? We're talking big archaeology today. So this article is called Titanic First Ever Full-Size Scans Reveal Wreck As Never Seen Before. And as you might imagine, it is these full-size digital scans of the Titanic. And the Titanic is 12,500 feet below the surface. So that is quite a feat.
Yeah.
And they did it using deep sea mapping.
Yeah. And you just open the article, look down at your show notes right now.
You need
Car over, stop jogging.
Yeah.
Doing whatever you're doing.
Pause this episode, come back to it when you can look at this link because it is so cool.
Yeah. Open your eyes, wake up and click on the show notes and open this because the
Please stop sleeping to us.
I mean, that's pretty good. You're falling deeper and deeper. Anyway, so there's a video, a 58-second video of the Titanic, the wreck, the digital scans of the Titanic. Mm-hmm. It's mostly not colorized. I feel like there's a little bit of color enhancement there, but it's mostly not colorized.
It's like they bring the rust color to life when they see it because they know it's rust sometimes. So you've got some oranges and some reds in there, but that's about it.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But the biggest thing I noticed from this picture is, first off, the back half is gone because that landed somewhere else.
Yeah.
And second, just look at the dirt surrounding the front half and how hard that thing hit the ground.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks like a meteor crater, right? It just like plowed straight into the ground.
It did.
It was amazing how much force it hit with. But even given that force, the main body and center part of the Titanic are relatively intact.
Yeah, it broke into two pieces, which we'll talk about a little bit more when we get into how they did this and why they did it. But it is in two pieces. And the back section, the stern, just almost pulverized when it hit the seafloor because of the way it hit. But the main image when you look at this article is of the bow section, and it really is like surprisingly intact. It's really cool.
Yeah, it's pretty
but
neat.
What really jumped out at me about these images is that there's none of those like floaty bits in the water.
Yeah.
You know, because all that floaty murky stuff that is there naturally in water, it's all removed. It really is like they just sort of like took all the photos and then drained the water away. And it's just what's left, which is the surface of the sea, the debris around it, and then the ship itself. It's just so cool to look at it like this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that has to do with the type of scanning that they did. It's incredibly detailed and cuts through all that stuff. And then when you're able to remove all that, you're just left with an incredibly detailed scan of something.
Mm-hmm.
And we do this with lots of things in archaeology and other areas, but this is something that everybody knows about.
Yeah.
And it's just really cool to see it that way because the Titanic, ever since, you know, James Cameron first took a submarine down there and we kind of saw it for the first time since 1912, everybody's been like, man, what does the rest of it look like?
Yeah, you know? For sure. Well, speaking of that, let's just do a few Titanic facts, a little bit of the history. I'm sure everybody knows, but just in case you weren't alive in 1996 and didn't go see the movie three times like I did, then I want to take you on the Titanic journey with me.
I have been on AT&T cell phone service because of the Titanic since then. Yeah. We switched from, what was it? It was actually house service because I didn't have a cell phone when this came out.
Right.
But when the VHS, the dual VHS came out,
because
you couldn't fit it on one VHS.
Oh, for sure. I had that. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. When that came out, there was a special offer to like get that for free if you switch to AT&T. And so
give me that Titanic.
My wife at the time was.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, fine, we'll switch and get this for free because it was a whole deal.
Oh my God, that's my favorite fact about you that I didn't know before and now I do know. So great.
I know. I've pretty much been on AT&T ever since.
Yep. Yeah. Great. Right. So. It's awesome.
Anyway, you know who's not on AT&T? 1,517 people that died on the Titanic.
Yes, that was the death number. And okay, so back to being real and scientific here because we're kind of going off the rails today, but
today.
So Titanic was built in Belfast, Ireland, and it was one of three Olympic class ships for the White Star Line. And these three ships were basically coming in to replace their previous ships. They were much bigger. They were meant to move a lot faster. It was going to be competitors with the other lines that were crossing the Atlantic at the time.
Yeah.
And it was just, you know, progress was marching forward. They had better technology. We're building better ships, basically. Well,
and like you said, they're faster. They were intended to cross the Atlantic every single week.
Yeah, yeah. Like these ships were moving. And the idea was that between the three ships, you could grab a ship across the ocean any week you wanted. That's what they wanted this to be.
Which makes me wonder that like after this happened, like their flagship, did they just continue those journeys with the other two ships?
They did. And they brought back one of the older ships too, what I was reading.
To kind of fill the gap.
Yeah. They just brought back an older ship and I don't think it moved as quickly, but they were able to, you know, make it work. So,
well, when they were building this, they were really concerned with the height of luxury.
Yes, and the design. And
that design sort of overruled some of the safety concerns.
Yeah, and actually even speed, too. Like, speed was one of their most important factors here. So, yeah, they definitely were not paying as close attention to safety as maybe they should have.
Yeah.
So, as we all know. But Titanic's maiden voyage left Southampton, England on April 10th, 1912. And it did pick up a few more passengers, various different stops, but it finally headed out into the North Atlantic on April 11th, 1912.
Yep.
1912.
Yeah.
Now, there were only enough lifeboats for 1,178 people, and there were 2,224 passengers and crew on this voyage.
Yeah, I don't
so
know.
That is a difference there.
I don't know who the engineers were, but that math doesn't work out.
No, but like, check this out. Not only was that not enough lifeboats for who was physically on that boat, they could have actually had up to like 3,300 people. They were not at full capacity because there had been some strikes recently and people canceled plans because of strikes. And they were like, I don't know, almost 1,000 people less than they could have potentially carried. So imagine how much worse it would have been if that hadn't happened.
Yeah.
But they didn't care about safety, so.
And they were very confident in its unsinkability.
Yeah.
Because of the way the bulkheads were and the how high they were. And like, if any one compartment filled up with water, everybody's seen the diagrams that were in the movie Titanic. Those aren't wrong.
They're not wrong. Yeah, they really did hit that. Right. And at the time, too, like Captain Smith himself, Captain Smith was, you know, the captain of the Titanic, he declared in 1907, which was a few years earlier, that he could not imagine any condition which would cause a ship to founder. Modern shipbuilding has gone beyond that.
Yeah.
They just were so, like, overconfident to the point of arrogance in their technology.
Yeah, they were so arrogant that they ignored numerous iceberg warnings from the lookouts. That was their job, was to, you know.
Not from the lookouts, from the other ships around. Because ships around were always sending messages like, iceberg here, blah, 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 watch out.
Yeah,
but they just
continued on at full speed.
And in their defense, I think it was common practice to sort of ignore them because icebergs, just generally speaking, didn't bother these big ships too much. But that was a fatal mistake, obviously.
Yeah, because a little before midnight on April 15th, 1912, they hit an iceberg. And by 2 a.m., they had fully sunk. Yeah. So it didn't take that long.
Yeah, it was very quick.
Yeah.
And of the 2,225 passengers, 1,517 died.
Yep.
Now, everybody knew about it. Everybody knew where it was. We had the coordinates of where this happened, you know. But it wasn't until 1985 that a combined American-French mission by Jean-Louis Michel and Robert Ballard were able to actually find the wreck on the floor of the North Atlantic.
Yeah, and it probably took that long for several reasons. One, even if you know exactly where the ship went down, which I highly doubt they had the exact coordinates of where it went down. I mean, they did report their position when they hit the iceberg, but they were also still moving.
They were. And the accuracy of the day, too, just wasn't quite...
Yeah.
Good enough. Yeah.
I'm sure it was pretty close. But even so, when that thing started going down, I mean, it still had forward momentum. It didn't go straight down to the sea floor. It had forward momentum for 12,500 feet, which is over 2.5 miles. And it can travel quite some distance.
So back to what this new expedition uncovered or revealed. In the summer of 2022, Magellan Limited, a deep sea mapping company, and Atlantic Productions, which is a production company, they began scanning the wreck. Atlantic Productions has plans to make a documentary about this project. So I am super excited for that because I am a sucker for anything Titanic and I will, you know, happily eat that up when it comes out.
Yeah. And for this scan, they took over 700,000 images using remotely controlled submersibles. So they didn't have to be down there. They had all these robot submersibles that were just taking pictures all the time. And that essentially, you've heard us talk about this on this show before, and you've heard us talk about it on the Archaeotech podcast, if you hear that, but that's photogrammetry. Mm-hmm. It's essentially structure from motion, they call it. Yep. It's taking a whole bunch of pictures at different angles because you can't just take pictures around the ship. You've got to take pictures at usually at least three angles. And for this project, they probably took it at way more than that for each piece of surface, right? Mm-hmm. And you've got to look at your distance from the object and then your angle to the object.
Yeah.
And you just go around and around and around and keep taking pictures.
Yeah, it sounds like it was pretty complicated because it was every square centimeter of this thing ended up being mapped by photo. Even the mud in between different pieces of debris, because if you don't have the bottom of the sea, then you don't have the whole picture if something is laying on the ocean floor. So it like even things that didn't seem like were important helped create this whole picture of the whole thing. There's even like a serial number on one of the propellers that wasn't able to be seen before because of the murkiness of the water and everything. But with this high quality photogrammetry, they're able to see it now. So they're definitely seeing things that they were never able to see before, which is really cool.
Yeah.
And this is the first time the wreck has been seen in its entirety too, rather than just like these sort of separated snapshots through this murky, gloomy water, right?
Yeah.
You know, you can actually like, if you watch the video in the link, you can kind of like spin around the whole vessel. It's really cool, or the pieces of the vessel, because they're separated on the open ocean floor.
Yeah, and as we mentioned, the bow and the center section are in much better condition than the stern, because the stern broke apart and basically swirled around and corkscrewed down to the sea floor. Mm-hmm. Did they get pictures of that? Did you see?
It's in there. Yeah. You watch that video, you can see it, and it's like pancaked basically. Like it's barely even like identifiable as the stern of the, of the ship, you know?
Yep. You can even see where the grand staircase was in the bow section, which is pretty cool. A lot of the big details there.
So we've all seen Titanic, the movie, and how it portrays it as, you know, they tried to turn and weren't able to turn in time and hit the iceberg on the starboard side. And that's what caused it to sink. And while that does make for great movie, it's not necessarily true. And we don't know for sure that that's exactly what happened. And they're hoping that by using these shots from the ocean floor that they can actually kind of tell what happened with more study and looking at the close details. So one thing that could have happened is rather than like hitting it because they were turning out of the way, they might have actually just like ground onto the iceberg in such a way that caused the compartments to fill up and then for it to eventually sink. So there's sort of like minor differences in details in how it happened, but it's still in one of the most tragic maritime accidents in the entire like world. You know, it's just something that is interesting to know the exact details of.
I mean, is it though? Because the Edmund Fitzgerald has a song.
It has a movie with Jack and Rose, and obviously it's the best movie in the whole world. And you can't convince me of that.
Wow.
Of anything other than that. So, yeah.
Well, anyway, these detailed images might show us the mechanics of how the ship actually hit the sea floor. And more importantly, how it's slowly destroying the ship as well, and how it's being eaten by microbes and just disintegrating.
Yeah. Since they found the ship in 1985, it's obviously been slowly disintegrating, like in front of our eyes, right? Because of these microbes and the other decomposition that just happens naturally. So we can't stop that process from happening. I don't think we'd ever bring the remains up from the bottom of the floor. It's a UNESCO heritage site, and I don't think they would even allow that to happen. But what these images can do is sort of freeze it in time. In the summer of 2022, it's now frozen in that time, and we can at least look at it from there, no matter what happens to it in real life. So it's stopping time, so to speak, for future studies.
Well, one other thing that's frozen in time is a whole bunch of people in Italy. We'll be back in a minute.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites,
according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back to episode 219 of the Archaeology Show, and it's the popular archaeology site edition. We started with the Titanic.
All the most famous places in the world, archaeology speaking.
And now we're moving over to Pompeii, which is another thing everybody's heard of. And segment three will be yet another thing everybody's heard of.
Yeah. Well, so, kind of. Segment three is a little bit less so, but anyway, we'll
at least the people.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, this is all about Pompeii.
Yeah.
And I went and pulled the original Associated Press article only because literally everybody reported on this. And the first sentence was, according to the Associated Press. And I was like, all right, well, let me just find their article. Mm-hmm. So I went there and found it. But this is skeletons found in Pompeii ruins reveal deaths by earthquake, not just Vesuvius's ancient eruption. Mm-hmm. Obviously, one of the most famous and well-known eruptions, volcanic eruptions, I should say, in history was that of Mount Vesuvius in 79 AD.
Yeah, I mean, that the destruction that it caused means that everybody will forever remember that. I don't know any other volcano eruptions. Like, I can't think of any others, you know?
I mean, there,
Krakatoa, maybe?
Well, there have been some modern ones in the last, like, 100 years.
Yeah.
And I think the reason why those are of similar notoriety as Pompeii is because Pompeii was one of the first major eruptions that took place in a very popular, very populated, well-written about location.
Yeah.
So Pompeii, like, everybody knew about it.
Yeah.
It was the vacation land of, you know, the rest of Italy.
Right.
And it was just, and the whole Mediterranean.
Yeah. And we were hitting a time period where we have written records of everything that was going on, a time period and a place.
Oh, they wrote everything.
We had all these written records, so we know exactly what happened and when and why and how and all of that. Yeah. Although, as we're learning, more stuff happened here than we necessarily thought had happened earlier.
Right, which we could probably assume, but now we're having evidence of. But anyway, to locate this, Pompeii and Mount Vesuvius are located outside Naples, Italy. Mm-hmm. You can see Mount Vesuvius from Naples. It's a very imposing force.
And
we saw this a few years ago when we were there.
Yeah.
We actually really went to Pompeii, did the tour. Mm-hmm. Yep. And I did the Pompeii tour back in 1996 when I was in the Navy. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure we talked about this when we recorded an episode about this a long time ago. Mm-hmm. But I've also been to the top of Mount Vesuvius.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Because we didn't do that this time around. But when I did the tour that was organized by the Navy, we took a bus like a portion of the way up. Mm-hmm. And then you walk basically the rest of the way. There's no vegetation. There's still very little vegetation on Vesuvius. Mm-hmm. There's just nothing grows there because there's not a lot of soil still.
Yeah.
I mean, it blew itself apart so completely that all the lava spewed in basically all directions. And it's just like lava rocks.
Yeah.
There's no soil yet.
Yeah.
It's probably going to take a couple more thousand years for there actually to be soil there.
Mm-hmm. And I think what a lot of people don't necessarily realize about the geography of the area is that Vesuvius is actually kind of far away from Pompeii, the city. The city was down on like the port area, right?
Kind of.
Or close to it. So it's down at the base of the mountain, but like where you went up to the top of it was, you know, kind of far away, actually.
Yeah, it wasn't far enough.
No, it wasn't.
And the actual, like, port city, now, I didn't write this down, and I didn't actually look at this before we were saying it, but there was another city that was actually closer on the port, and that was Herculaneum.
Oh, yeah, Herculaneum.
And it was equally destroyed, but just not as popular and big
to
be
smaller,
talked about.
Yeah,
just like Pompeii was.
Yep.
So, anyway, it's long been thought, mostly because of just evidence and common sense, that most of the people died as a result of volcanic ash and gases, which is true. Most of the people did die that way.
And that's where those like sort of ghostly images of people like stretched out on the ground. That's from the volcanic ash sort of covered their bodies and left a cast of them.
Yeah, they were encased and basically burned to death in that volcanic ash.
Yeah.
And then were essentially replaced by ash, almost like fossilization.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, it was the craziest process. It leaves these really haunting outlines of human bodies, basically.
When the eruption was happening, there was, of course, some major eruptions that really took down the city, but it was erupting for a few days.
Yeah.
That's how volcanoes work, right? It was erupting for a few days. There was a lot of smaller eruptions before and after the couple of big ones. And along with volcanic eruptions, if you're close enough to the volcano, I mean, a volcano erupts because there's some kind of a plug. There's pressure buildup. That mm-hmm. plug gets blown out by the pressure of the magma beneath it mm-hmm. as it's rising because of the gases that are involved, and then spews out in an explosive force, which is where all the ash comes from. But then also the magma flows just down the side of the mountain. Mm-hmm. That's the slightly slower part of it. It's like very similar, you would probably see, to opening the vent on a Instant Pot. You know, I'm going to say that's probably exactly the same thing. So everybody knows what I'm talking about.
Wait, what are you talking about?
You know, the explosive gases. So anyway.
Okay, got it.
So that is what killed most people. But like uh-huh. I said, there were earthquakes happening. That's where I was going.
Yeah.
Earthquakes because of the seismic events. I mean, when you have an entire mountain that's basically shaking like this from this massive explosion, you're going to have seismic events. And Pompeii was close enough that it would have felt those.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. while the Romans are famous for their concrete and how durable it is, I mean, you know,
it's an earthquake.
Limits.
Yeah. And they didn't have, you know, building codes and stuff to dictate the safety of the structures, no matter how good they were. So
now, here's how little they really knew about volcanoes and what was going on. There were seismic events happening before the volcano ever really spewed anything. It was mm-hmm. probably smoking pretty heavily, but mm-hmm. it had done that before. And they were probably like, I don't know what's happening.
It'll be fine. It's done this before. It's no big deal.
Right. Well, the skeletons of what were believed to be two men, and not their ash, like, outlines.
No, no.
Their
no,
actual
no, no. These
skeletons.
These are actual skeletons. You can see them in the pictures.
And they were both at least 55 years old, judging by their bones and how they were formed. Mm-hmm. They were found beneath a wall that collapsed before the area was covered in ash.
Yep.
So they were doing something there. They were either working on it or maybe they lived there.
Yep.
But they were there and a earthquake happened. The wall fell over and killed them.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe nobody noticed because they were evacuating the city or who knows what was going on. Or maybe people just saw them and said, well, they're dead. So we'll deal with that later.
Just didn't have time. Yeah. Because they're evacuating. We don't know when this happened. It could have been literally minutes before the actual eruption happened.
Could have been.
You know?
Yeah.
Like the specific timeline is just impossible to know.
The only thing we know is their bodies were relatively protected from the ash by the fallen rock.
Yeah, they were
by the wall.
They were underneath something that protected them and they didn't burn away or decompose, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One thing I thought was cool is we know the names of most of the houses in Pompeii mm-hmm. that have been uncovered just because there's places where people put that.
Mm-hmm.
Like they still do this in like England. Like every single house and everything
placards.
Has a name to it.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Not every single one of them, but yeah, a lot of them do.
Mm-hmm.
But this is called Casti Amanti, or House of the Chaste Lovers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't know why, but that's what it's called.
That seems like an oxymoron, but
now,
sure.
I'm not sure that was actually the name historically of the house.
Oh, but it's the name now.
It's the name now, and I didn't actually dig into that too much, but it's more than likely, you know, they found something else, and archaeologists named that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that, but I didn't even look at it, but...
Yep.
Anyway, the director of the Pompeii Archaeological Park, Gabriel Zuchtriegel, probably got that wrong, says that new archaeological techniques and methodology, quote, allow us to understand better the inferno that in 2 days completely destroyed the city of Pompeii, killing many inhabitants, unquote.
Mm-hmm.
And this, again, makes it possible to determine the dynamic of deaths down to the final seconds
mm-hmm.
and you know, how people really experience this thing.
Yeah, it does make you realize that, like, they probably did ignore a lot of warning signs.
Yeah.
And it was probably because of past history. And when things didn't go badly, they were like, well, this will be fine. It's just kind of rumbling. It's doing its Pompeii thing. It's fine. Whatever.
Yeah.
Or it's doing its Vesuvius thing. It's fine. Whatever. We can ignore it and move on with our lives. But, oh boy, what a fatal mistake right there.
Speaking of fatal mistakes, not that this is a competition or anything, but more people died here. 1,300 have been found than the Titanic.
I don't believe that's true, sir. I think that the total that died in Titanic was 1,517 people. So
we know for a fact that about 1,300 victims have been found in Pompeii, but I didn't see the percentage listed here, but I've seen it before. A very small percentage of the city of Pompeii has actually been excavated.
Oh, so there's probably like a lot more.
A lot more.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you look at 1,300 in this one small section, mm-hmm. and it's actually a really big section, but it's a small portion of the city mm-hmm. comparatively.
So
it's less than half.
Is the 1,300 just from like bodies or outlines of bodies that we found, or is that also based on historical references that say who died too?
No, that's have been found.
That's have been found. Okay. Yeah.
Historical references probably list a different number.
Yeah.
And I don't know what that is because I didn't look it up.
Yeah.
But 1,300 victims have been found. I'm willing to bet the historical references weren't exactly accurate. Because
probably not.
They probably only counted for the like nobility that died and maybe their slaves.
Yeah, maybe. Right.
But there's so many people in Pompeii and so many different ethnicities and people coming in from different areas and speaking different languages that how could they all have been accounted for? Mm-hmm. You know, the only way we're going to be able to account for them is with archaeology.
Yeah. And probably most of Pompeii won't be fully excavated because it's just too big and there's too much of it.
Yeah.
It just wouldn't. I can't imagine that happening, but maybe.
Yep. Well, if Pompeii had had the god of fertility, abundance, and royal lineage nearby, maybe they would have survived. But you know who did? The ancient Maya.
That was a terrible transition.
Back in a minute.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back to the popular archaeology edition of the Archaeology Show, episode 219. And we're going over to another popular area that, well, at least a culture that everyone's heard about, and that is the ancient Maya.
Yes.
And I say ancient Maya because I have to distinguish that because there are current Maya, if you heard our last episode.
That is true. Yeah.
Yeah. We've met some. Uh-huh. You know, there's definitely Mayan descendants
living in Mexico. Absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
Yep. Yeah. They're just called Mexicans now or Guatemalans or,
they identify as Mayan.
They
too,
do
culturally.
Locally, but like politically, they're Mexicans.
True.
So, or Guatemalans, or like I said, there's other areas down there because they have a pretty wide place that they were in.
Yeah.
It's like Native Americans are Native Americans, but also Americans.
Right. True.
Right.
Yeah. It's a cultural identity for sure.
Yeah. So we picked up this article. It's called "Archaeologists Digging Along a Train Route in Mexico Have Found an Extremely Rare Statue of a Maya Deity." Mm-hmm. And I picked this up because I'm always drawn towards like CRM articles in other countries. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we just don't see a lot of stuff that's been found through CRM in just like popular news articles,
right?
You know, because that stuff's often not reported right away. Mm-hmm. And by the time it is
like
reported,
secrecy around projects and stuff too. Sometimes
there can be. So, but anyway, real quick, CRM stands for Cultural Resource Management. It's the kind of archaeology Rachel and I did for our careers and still do occasionally. And it's often done in advance of construction to ensure artifacts, features, and monuments are not damaged and are preserved. So every country has just about some version of CRM, some sort of regulatory requirement to do something, right?
Even if they don't have like really strict preservation and protection procedures, you know, they still have something usually.
Right. And if you heard our last week's episode, it seems like some trains are being built in Maya country. So it's not always a bad idea to build a train.
It can't Well, if it's a train for transportation purposes that is taking people from A to B, then yes, that is very important. And it is.
But what if
it
B,
is building that needs to happen?
What if A is a village and B is 3 days into the jungle?
But if A is not happy about said train, then there are things that need to be discussed beforehand.
I'm going to kick you in the A and go on my B train. So, all right.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, like I said, the CRM project archaeologists here in Mexico were excavating construction sites. So excavating around construction sites for mm-hmm. this new, they actually call it the Maya train.
Oh, okay.
I'm not, I didn't look it up to see like where this thing goes or what it's doing.
Yeah.
But they're building it currently. Okay. So, but they found a rare statue of the Mayan god. And I'm going to get this completely wrong. Ka'awil.
That seems pretty good.
Yeah. Ka'awil. And it's yeah. K apostrophe A W I I L.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be Ka'awil or Ka'awil, maybe?
Yeah.
Not really sure.
Ka'awil? There could be like a two syllables in the eyes.
Yeah,
but
I'm not really
anyway,
sure.
Yeah.
Anyway, this particular deity has often been represented in paintings, relief sculpture, and more famously in the Dresden and Maya codices, which mm-hmm. are documents, basically.
Mm-hmm.
This is a rare three-dimensional figure because it's a sculpture, and it was found on top of an urn.
Yeah, again, it's really a great idea to click those links in the show notes and go check it out because yeah. there's some great photos of it in the article so you can really get an idea of what you're looking at and how unique it is.
Yeah.
Like that is to find this on a train route archaeology project is
right.
it seems really, really special. It's really unique.
Well, and the other stuff they found on that particular site were vessels, pottery fragments, bones,
mm-hmm.
and foundations of ancient structures, which much like England, I'm sure you can't drop a shovel in Maya country without uncovering something ancient.
Yeah.
They were just, I mean, they were everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, they had roads, they had cities, they had all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, the general director of Mexico's National Institute of Anthropology and History says the finding is important because of the scarcity of sculptural representations of Ka'awil.
Mm-hmm.
They know of only three, and this is the first to be found actually in Mexico.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So
Ka'awil is known as the ancient Maya lightning lord.
Yep.
And he was, or she? He. Probably he, right?
I think he is represented as a he.
Yeah. He is the god of fertility, abundance, and royal lineage. Because if we know nothing about royals, fertility is important to them. So lump those things together, I guess.
Right. Well, and the way that that's signified on, again, paintings and drawings and stuff like that is he's often represented as a scepter because he stands on one leg.
Oh.
When he's represented. So uh-huh. it's easy to make it look like somebody is like holding this god
mm-hmm.
as like a scepter or mm-hmm. or almost as a cane too.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
When it is represented that way, the person that is holding it is usually represents that they have royal lineage.
Okay.
That's why he signifies that.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. One of his legs actually terminates in a serpent's head.
Oh.
That's the one that actually comes down to the ground, I think, from the pictures I saw. And it's likely why the Popol Vuh, which is the sacred book of the, again, K'iche Maya,
mm-hmm.
it's a really actually famous book in Maya country, mm-hmm. right? Pretty much every person who's read anything about the Maya has heard of the Dresden Codex and the Popol Vuh.
Yeah.
But it identifies him as lightning one leg. That's why they call him that. Yeah.
The best name ever.
I know.
And if I were to, you know, not have one of my legs for any reason, I would like to be known as
Lightning One Leg.
Lightning One Leg, because that's an amazing nickname.
I think if I did lose a leg, I would probably have like a USB port or something installed down there and a battery installed in my little leg socket so I could literally be Lightning One Leg. Yeah.
You just made me snort. You are just so determined to become digital in some way or another.
Yes, yeah. That's not wrong. Yeah. So,
well, that is really cool that they have been able to add this statue to our very few representations of this type of Maya deity. So,
yeah.
And good for CRM for being the ones who found it and contributed it to our society.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or our knowledge, really, not really our society.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. And I imagine they're finding a whole bunch of stuff on mm-hmm. here. But like I said, it's not really internationally newsworthy because it's probably a lot of stuff they're used to finding in the Mayan country. But still, super cool. And I want to know a lot more about the Maya train.
Well, yeah. And if it was found on an urn, like clearly you don't just find urns like scattered around. They're in some sort of like burial area usually, which means they're probably working in a cemetery area, which is part of a larger complex probably. So they probably are doing excavation in a much larger area that is much bigger and has more significance than just this one statue on this one urn. So it would be cool to see how that sort of ends up when they're done with the excavations.
Well, take a look at the show notes, because not only do we have these articles, but I also included an article that specifically gives you more information on the ancient Maya lightning lord.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes me think of, just because it's out now and we were looking at movie times, like Guardians of the Galaxy 3, because what does he call himself? The Lord, Space Lord or something? Or
yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I can't remember what he calls him. Time Lord?
He wants to be Time Lord is Doctor Who. But.
Oh yeah, Doctor Who. He's like Lord something. And it made me think about it because we're just looking at it. But Lightning Lord.
Yeah, Lightning Lord is pretty sweet.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yep.
All right, well, that's all we've got for this week. We will be back next time. See you later.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to The Archaeology Show. Feel free to comment and view the show notes on the website at www.arcpodnet.com. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at ArcPodNet. Music for this show is called I Wish You Would Look from the band Sea Hero. Again, thanks for listening and have an awesome day. This episode was produced by Chris Webster from his RV traveling the United States, Tristan Boyle in Scotland, DigTech LLC, Cultural Media, and the Archaeology Podcast Network, and was edited by Chris Webster.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
.com.